And now, BadQuaker.com, in recognition of our 100th podcast, would like to present our 100th podcast. What would you expect? Back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. I'm Ben.
I'm Kai.
So we're a little late on the story on this one because this happened over the weekend, and as the week has progressed, more and more people have caught on to it and it's gaining momentum. But
well, it was one of those things where when you first see it, you're like, oh well, that's that, and then everyone in the media and general public make a stir about it, and you're like, wait. You didn't catch that?
Yeah.
That was obvious.
Yeah. And what we're talking about is the Clint Eastwood Super Bowl commercial where he essentially endorses fascism.
Right.
He endorses all the whole government line about how, oh, Detroit's getting better now that we handed them all this money and, you know, Chrysler's
really?
On its way back.
Go to Detroit.
Yeah, really. Detroit's in the process of, like, cutting whole neighborhoods off from services like sewers and fire trucks, you know.
This is after their plan to forcibly relocate people. They decided to abandon that plan.
Yeah, because for some reason they were getting pushback on that.
Right? I can't imagine why. The idea that was ever the plan.
Yeah.
Like that was a viable option for you, Detroit? Uh-huh. Really?
And I can't remember if it was Monday or Tuesday. I'm not sure exactly when I put some kind of snide remark. And I can't remember if it was under the Bad Quaker Facebook account or if it was under my own Facebook account. But I said some kind of snide remark like, he's an actor. He's just like the politicians. He makes a living being a fake person.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you surprised?
Yeah, he puts on the mask of cowboy.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, guess what? Chuck Norris
is not a real Texas Ranger.
Oh, my. Jesse Ventura, not a real... Wait a minute.
Governor? Not real.
No, I already picked on Jesse. Poor Jesse.
Poor good old Jesse.
He's going to run off in Mexico and not talk to us anymore.
With his SEAL buddies.
Yeah, you know about him saying he's going to go to Mexico now, he's not going to be an American, because this is all over the airport scanners and everything, which, you know, my solution, like we talked about earlier, my solution is I don't fly.
Yeah.
And so what are you going to do? Now, I will admit, if I had Jesse Ventura's money, I would
I would abandon as quickly as I could.
But for most of us, leaving the geographical area currently referred to as the United States is not an option.
Right.
And it's going to become less and less of an option as time goes by. As soon as they can get their fence built and move in all the troops on the border, then all of a sudden, how are you going to leave?
Yeah.
When this police state continues to get worse and worse, how are you going to leave?
Yeah.
You know, it's a funny thing because you have to have... there was who said that statement? There was a statement from somebody. It was quoted in the book Mises, The Last Night of Liberalism, but I can't remember who was quoted. And he was referring to the pre-World War I Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that a man could pretty much go from any one place in Europe to any other place, crossing border after border.
Mm-hmm.
Never show any kind of state-authorized passport or identification or permission slip. You could just travel freely.
Mm-hmm.
There were no restrictions on travel. And if you wanted to trade from one of these cities to another of these cities, you could just do so.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of World War I, that all changed in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And Europe had these now, all this, you know, for thousands of years, there were borders in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And they were real borders, but you could still just come and go as you please.
Right.
All of a sudden in the 20th century, now the borders are all closed and you have to have permission papers to cross from one country to the other.
Yep.
And that's how, you know, people say, like I've heard people specifically, I've heard people say, if you don't have control of your borders, you don't have a sovereign nation. Well, first off, why would you want a sovereign nation? You just acknowledge the deity of the state.
Yep.
You just admitted you worship the state as a god.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what sovereign means.
Words have meanings.
Yeah. I want a sovereign nation. Really? And where is the idol that you're going to bow at to worship this god of yours?
Yeah.
Because that's what sovereign means. Words have meanings, and that word has the meaning sovereign means it's a deity.
Yep.
That's what a sovereign is. That's why, as a Quaker, I can't go to a king and bow before a king and acknowledge him as my sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a blasphemy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you do that with the state, that's what you've done. But it's a funny thing, because the same right-wing conservative that spews that blather about a sovereign nation and about securing the border will tell you how we need to return to how things used to be.
Right.
It wasn't that long ago that you could just come and go across the border. And it was no problem.
It literally wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, no, it was within my lifetime.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, we just go, you're in San Diego, you just go over there. You just go.
Well,
and they stop you on the way in. They say, you bring any fruits and vegetables, because they didn't want, there was contamination mm-hmm. issues. And if you say, no, I don't have any fruits and vegetables, your word was good enough.
Right.
And you could go into California.
But they had a dog, right, that sniffed you?
You know.
Well, and not even, what, less than 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. You could go into Canada
with no, you just go.
Yeah.
And then you come back.
And you can't do that now.
Now you need an official paper stating that you officially are a slave of this nation, and this nation gives its slave permission to go to this other nation.
Did you see the YouTube video of the couple trying to come into the U.S., the Canadian couple, trying to come into the U.S. to go shopping at a mall?
Mm-mm.
I can't remember which border crossing, but they had the video on, you know, as mm-hmm. they pull up in line, and it's taken forever, and so they've got the video on, and the Border Patrol comes up to their window and says something or other, like, you know, what are you doing? And they're like, it's just a pleasure trip. We're going shopping at the mall. And he asked to see their ID, and they're like, oh, you're Canadians. Yeah, we're just coming in to go shopping at the mall. Which mall are you going to? Oh, I don't know. What's the name of the mall? And, you know, the guy's like, I don't know. I'm just a driver. What do I know? guys don't like to go to, I'm just taking the wife to the mall. What do I know?
Right.
But he's polite, but he's like, I don't know, what's the name of the mall? And she tells him, he's like, it's here. And the guy's like, what are you going to buy there? And the guy's like, what? What are you planning on buying? Well, I don't know. We'll get there, we'll go shopping, we'll see what... Well, what's the purpose of the trip? What are you going there to get? Well, we're not going to get anything, we're just going to the mall. Well, what stores are you going to visit the mall?
The ones at the mall.
And the guy's like, what are you talking about? And then immediately the guard, I started to say, and it's what it is, it's a prison guard.
Yeah.
The goon says, you're going to have to pull over here. And they separate them out. They take them in. They horribly harass them. And they just fill these people with fear just because they wanted to come into the U.S. and go to the mall. And they didn't bow properly, you know, and go through it. It's ridiculous. Now
the slaves were uppity.
Yeah. So at some point in time, the people in the United States are going to realize all this activity to close the borders works in two directions.
Yeah.
And so as we see more and more of a police state...
And I love that. You know, people are like, oh, this is America. If you don't like it, get out. Really?
Yeah. Well, we can't.
How?
I can't. I can't leave.
Yeah.
I'm stuck right here. You know, here's another thing. Let's say, and this is not related to what I just said. I can't leave because I don't have my papers. Mm-hmm. I don't have a passport. Now, let's say somebody gets picked up for any of the number of ridiculous things, because almost everything's against the law now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't believe that, pick up 3 felonies a day by Harvey, what is his name? Silvergate. 3 felonies a day by Harvey Silvergate. Now, this guy is not a libertarian, and, mm-hmm. you know, he's just, he goes through and he shows how if you just live your life normally, you get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you wash your face, you do all the stuff you do in the morning, have some breakfast, drive to work, maybe go to the office, maybe go to sit in your cubicle, you do this or that, you go out at lunch, you come home at night, you watch some TV, you go to bed, the odds are you've committed on average 3 felonies a day. Now, that doesn't mean they'll prosecute you.
No.
What he goes on to show in this book is that essentially the way the laws are right now in the United States, anybody they want bad enough, they can find at least 3 felonies to charge you with.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're put in a position where you have to either pull a plea bargain or you have to, if you have the finances to do it, you can begin the battling process to try to get yourself out of it.
Right.
But the first thing is, they get you on the radar. If they get you on the radar, they can find something
mm-hmm.
to nail you for.
And that's, you know, it starts out that way. It starts out with the state saying, okay, we're going to have these rules, and the only people that we're going to disappear
mm-hmm.
are people who break these rules.
Right.
And then, as time goes on, they begin to make it so that they have to justify that less and less and less until eventually
right.
it's just whoever they want.
Yeah, they don't even have to give an answer anymore.
Yeah.
Because it becomes so commonplace that they don't have to give an answer. And they're almost to that point right
mm-hmm.
now. So now here's what I started to point out. Once you get the wrong kind of felon on your record, you can't get
mm-hmm.
a passport. You can't leave.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on top of that, if you and I should probably replay in one of these best of episodes that I do, I should probably replay the interview I did with Alan
mm-hmm.
From last year
mm-hmm.
because Alan is a perfect situation. He was a honor student, captain of the football team. He's like doing all the right stuff. He's living
right.
this perfect life, just like this idyllic,
just
like you're supposed
all American.
To.
American.
Yeah, yeah. In a small town, he's like, what's that singer with the small town? Anyway. he's doing all the right stuff. And he gets this opportunity. Somebody comes to him and says, hey, you want to buy a rifle? And he's like, I don't know. You know, it's a hunting community.
Right.
So there's, you know, it's not like we're in downtown New York or something.
Right.
So he's got the opportunity to buy a rifle. And he's like, well, I don't know how much you want for it. And the price seemed reasonable, so he bought it.
Right.
Turns out the rifle was stolen. Well, so it ends up with him taking a plea bargain because he didn't have the money to fight.
Right.
The go through all the processes and everything. So he ends up taking a plea bargain. Now he's got a felon on his record. Now that he's got a felon on his record, pretty much everything he does, he can get picked up for anything.
Yep.
He has to give urine samples constantly. You know, it just goes on and on and on and on. And every time he turns around, they're finding some other little thing to add on to what they've already got.
Yep.
Now he's in his mid-30s. And he's still stuck in the system.
Yeah.
Every time he gets pulled over, he has to ask himself, what am I going back to prison for this time?
Yeah.
Because he really doesn't know. It can be anything. Because we live our lives. The laws are so vaguely written, and there's so many of them, that they can find something to nail you for.
Yep. And it's becoming more and more, you know, the state wants everyone to feel like they are a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want you to feel like...
Yeah, get in line.
You,
subject that, yourself to searches.
Right, that you have to be overly compensative with your masters.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, mm-hmm. then they're going to just do all these... They're going to make your life miserable.
And I think there's this lie that especially the middle and upper middle class people tell themselves this. They, because the person in my interview, Alan,
mm-hmm.
he's not from a rich family.
Right.
He's not in a rich area. He's in an area that's never really seen any wealth, you know. In addition to that, you know, even though he had a lot of potential, had he not made that one single silly mistake, he had a lot of potential of moving himself into lower to middle class earnings,
mm-hmm.
you know. He never really probably would have the opportunities to really excel in anything because they're just that community and that region and everything. It's just
right.
not there. The opportunities are not there. So people in the upper middle class and the upper middle.
upper middle.
You don't, like, where we are, okay, I'll say it like this. Where we are here in Springboro, Ohio, this is essentially the suburbs between Cincinnati and Dayton.
Right.
And there's a comfortable amount of money in this area. Now, that doesn't mean that there are rich people.
Right.
There are a few here and there. But generally speaking, what you're talking about is...
There are just a lot of people living above their means.
Yeah, that's true. But let's say the houses are going for the, let's say, 150 up to the 500,000 range, mm-hmm. 150,000 to 500 range, according to which neighborhood you're in.
Right.
Okay, in that area where Alan is from, the houses are more like 20, 30,000.
Right.
Because the small towns, there's not a lot of going on in their economies and so forth like that. Right. So the people living in neighborhoods like are around us here are entirely insulated from what's happening in those areas like where Alan is from.
Well, yeah, because, you know, they pick up kids in the exact same situation as Alan,
mm-hmm.
you know, but because they're from this sort of community,
yeah,
they have this buffer of, well, you can afford litigation,
yeah.
Or it's just that they don't purposely keep you in the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a slap on the wrist and you get shuffled on through.
Yeah.
You know, you get a slap on the wrist enough to say, oh, don't do that,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then they expect that you will have learned your lesson.
Right.
Whereas they feel like with the lower class people, they have to really, mm-hmm. you know, be on them. Otherwise, yeah. they won't learn this lesson.
And it's the same for inner city as it is for way out in the country like that. The inner city people have the same limited opportunities, and they have the same relationship with the police
yep.
in those depressed inner cities as they have out in the country, where you think, you know, most people think, well, if I could just get out in the country, I'd be free. No, then you're very likely to run into a situation where there's a corrupt judge that's running a scam with a series of counseling offices.
Yep.
And once you get into that loop, then you're going to get picked up over and over and over, and you're going to have to pay not only your fine and not only maybe a little token jail time, but mostly what they want is they want you on probation.
Yep.
So that you're paying your probation officer every month, and yep. you're going to the counseling every 2 weeks.
And you're paying for your diagnostics.
And all that stuff is going into this whole huge system that most of middle America doesn't even know exists.
And it... In some ways, it's almost worse if you're in a small town
mm-hmm.
because the proportion of cops
mm-hmm.
to people yeah. that they're harassing is much smaller than in an inner city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in an inner city, you have
lots of people
that are harassing or that are being harassed by a few cops.
Mm-hmm.
But in an inner city, they can dog you every time you step outside. Yeah.
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 You said it
backwards. I said it backwards. But in the country,
yeah.
you know, they can... we've had that experience.
Yeah.
You know, we pulled up in front of the Kroger,
mm-hmm.
and they had made an association with our car.
Yeah, because they thought somebody else was driving it.
Mm-hmm. And started harassing you.
And the swarm comes. And once they started, even though they realized it was me... They had already started,
yeah.
So they're not going to back down,
right?
Because the ego is a problem,
right?
But in Alan's situation, the funny thing is, and if you say, "Well, Alan is a bad egg," that's why he's like this, because Alan is, yeah. But it's funny because I spent some time there, and I was looking around, and I was interviewing people both before and after the interview I did with Alan, and this is what I'm finding: pretty much everybody they know mm-hmm. is in this system. And it's not like, oh, well, you just all of your friends are bad. No, you go walk around, go into the grocery store, go over there to the car wash, mm-hmm. go to all of the local jobs that were within this whole area. Everybody in all those local jobs were in this system.
Yep.
Now, if you break out of that and you get into the upper crust of the society, again, you're talking upper middle class, there's far fewer of them there in that community.
Right.
But they're left alone.
Yeah.
The cops are not bothering them at all. The judge doesn't have them on their radar. And if something happens with them, it's settled and it's over. But they know these poorer people cannot afford the legal defense that it takes to overcome this. So literally, you walk into the, say, the Walmart or the Home Depot or the any of those businesses like that, and you start walking around among the employees. And these are all solid citizens with stable jobs, living their life, and everything in every other place would be normal with them, except every single one of them is on probation for something. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't have a whole community full of people like that and try to tell me, oh, well, they're all criminals.
Yeah.
Well, if they're all criminals, why aren't they all violent, falling all over each other, killing each other in total melee and just, right. you know, they're not. And you start listening to what the crimes are that they're accused of or what they've been actually convicted of, because all of them...
Stuff like, I got drunk and was in public, and I got picked up for drunk in public, and I've been on probation for 5 years because of that.
Yeah, and where were you picked up at? I was at the bar.
Yeah.
You were drunk at a bar? Did you get in a fight or something? No, I just couldn't pass the drunk test.
Yeah.
At the bar.
Yeah, and I've been on probation for 5 years because of that.
Yeah. Well, to quote the one comedian, you know...
I didn't want to be drunk in public. I wanted to be drunk in a bar.
and you know, if you're in a bar and you're drinking and you're not driving and you're not fighting...
That's what the bar is for.
One would think. And you don't have to be falling down drunk or making a scene or anything. Their point is they just swoop in and they grab who they want to grab and they give you the same drunk test that they would give to a driver and bang, you're drunk in public. Mm-hmm. Even though you're not driving.
After the cops pull you out of the bar.
Yeah. So, and that's just one thing. It can be like a pot conviction. It can be something you didn't do at all, but the prosecutor has convinced you that if you don't take the plea on this, we're going to really come after you, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. You know, there can be a situation where a neighbor misunderstands a situation and calls the police and says, you know, I don't know, I think maybe their kids are alone over there. Mm-hmm. And they're not. Mm-hmm. The parent is there with the kids. Nobody's alone, but the neighbor got confused and thought something. So in come Protective Services. And the first thing they do is they come in, you know, full blown. Mm-hmm. They want to check the temperature on your water heater. They want to check, you know, are your towels clean? Yep. I mean, they get nuts with this kind of stuff.
Yep.
And middle America does not know this. And I know they don't know it, because if they did know it, there would be revolution in this country now.
What I love is, you know, with Child Protective Services, okay, so it's Thursday, you get paid tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And there's no food in your house. Well, yeah, because you haven't gone shopping because you go shopping on payday.
And the lower end poor people don't have, I mean, we're in a room here where if all of a sudden there was an earthquake and we were trapped in this room, we could probably live 6 months. But, uh-oh, that puts us on a list. But poor people don't have that luxury.
But that's the nutty thing, because if you don't have a well-stocked pantry, they cite you for, you know, not having adequate food for your child and starving your child. But if you have a well-stocked pantry, they charge you for being a nut job religious person.
Yeah, you're a survivalist and you're a hoarding food.
Yeah, conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. I'm not wearing a foil cap right now at all.
That goes back to it. When you start to tell people about what is happening in this country,
mm-hmm.
it's so unbelievable that you come off sounding like a nut job.
And this is not new. Henry Ford said, this was way back in the 20s, Henry Ford said that if the bulk of America understood the current banking process, and he was talking about the Federal Reserve mm-hmm. and fractional reserve banking, and back then, Henry Ford said that if the people of America understood what's going on in banking, there would be revolution tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
That's Henry Ford saying that back in the 1920s, because he understood what they had just done with the Federal Reserve and switching around the banking the way they did.
Yeah.
And the American people don't know. They just, as long as they can go, well, Elizabeth Higgs once said, and I'm going to misquote her a little bit, but she said, as long as they can go to the Best Buy and 24 hours ahead of time and wait at 3 a.m. in the morning so that they can get in first thing on the day after Thanksgiving and get a laptop for under $100, they think they're free.
Yeah.
You know, that's what most Americans think. Oh, I'm free. I can go get me a McDonald's hamburger anytime I want. Yeah. You're real free, Jethro.
Oh, you mentioned McDonald's. Oh, you mentioned McDonald's.
Uh-oh.
I wasn't going to bring up McDonald's.
The Mick word.
Have you seen the new McDonald's advertisements?
I don't think so.
They may not be on the air yet. Mm-hmm. But because I'm part of this website, and part of it is you screen advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
So you get paid to watch advertisements before they come out on TV.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I was utterly sick of the Super Bowl ads like a month before the Super Bowl, because I was like, yeah, I know, I've seen the Jerry Seinfeld commercial like 40 million times. Not funny anymore. Yeah, he's got an alien. Great. Awesome. So they've got these McDonald's commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Where they are, get to know the McDonald's supplier. And they've got this guy who's walking among his field with his cattle, and he's petting the cattle's head, and there's like 50 cattle on the field, you know, and they're eating grass, and he's all, McDonald's has got such high quality standards, and if we don't meet the standards, then they don't buy from us. And you're like, dude, lies, whatever.
Yeah.
They buy from you so that you're their token.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And they everyone
buy,
else.
For the whole corporation, they buy your 3 cows a year.
Yeah. So that they can come and film
uh-huh.
an advertisement and say.
The rest of their bulk comes out of the feedlot.
Yeah.
Where they're stacked shoulder to shoulder, standing on 6 feet of their own poop.
Yeah.
Glued together by meat glue.
Hey, you look at this and you're like, on the one hand, are there people who actually would watch this and believe that this is true?
Well, they do because they want to.
Yeah. They want to not feel guilty about eating McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know? And that's not to say that you shouldn't or you should eat McDonald's. I eat McDonald's, you know, not often because it makes me feel ucky.
Yeah.
But
it's better than starving.
Right. On occasion, I have been known to stop and eat something from McDonald's.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not sitting here going, I'm holier than thou art, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that McDonald's hamburger is not coming.
Right.
From some happy cow that's frolicking in a field.
Yeah, that is not a grass-fed,
yeah, you know. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I've been to restaurants where they serve grass-fed meat.
Yeah.
I know a farmer locally who raises grass-fed meat.
Uh-huh.
It costs, for a hamburger, like $7-$8 for the meat.
Yeah.
McDonald's can't.
No.
McDonald's cannot buy grass-fed meat.
You can't sell dollar hamburgers from grass-fed beef.
No. It's not possible.
And that's kind of the other half of this, you know. If the market wants that stuff from McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
then great. Have it.
Right.
I don't think there should be any interference.
No.
If that's what the market wants. I don't think there should be deception like that.
Right.
You know. But then again, okay, who's going to stop the deception? Well, the government is not stopping the deception.
Right. That the idea that the government could is ridiculous.
So really you have to let the market control itself.
Right.
If you want. And that's the problem right now, is that we see we're taught our whole life that you can't, false marketing, false advertising is not allowed.
Right.
The government will stop that. The FCC has rules. You can't false advertise. And yet people do it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
All they have to do is just do it in a way to where nobody is going to specifically go after them and prosecute them for it.
Yeah.
And then they can say anything they want. Like I have ranted about before, you can have this truck climbing this completely unrealistic metal structure with flames shooting out at it in every direction and giant seesaws and giant metal balls swinging at the truck and it's dodging in them and the truck is sliding down a ski slope doing a loop and all these ridiculous things. We can put those on.
Or we can have, you know, the crane drop a load of timber or something, yeah. rocks, into the bed of a truck. And there's no way that yeah. that truck could handle that load.
Yeah, assuming you could drop that stuff in the truck and not just break the springs immediately,
mm-hmm.
you would never be able to drive that truck and use it again.
Right.
It's gone. But they can do that stuff. And because nobody challenges them, you know, mm-hmm. and who's going to challenge them? If Dodge is putting on one commercial like this and Ford's doing another commercial and Toyota's doing another commercial, who's going to challenge them on this?
Right.
They're all lying. And they're all, you know, it's like going to one mafioso and saying, hey, you know, I'm getting harassment by this guy or this other mafioso over there. Hey, what do you want me to do? Yeah, you know, yeah. we're all in the same business.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take him on for you.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not going to do anything about it.
And the government is in the same business.
Yeah, it's they're right just there with the them. Biggest, the most powerful mafioso. So now how do we go from... to my somebody mentioned the mech word.
But I get so frustrated with that because, I don't know, I suppose... There's some little capitalist part of my soul that says if people fall for that, they deserve it.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to the Clint Eastwood thing, you know, with his little fascist commercial for the Super Bowl. In defense of that, the Obama people immediately ran out and said, no, I think it was the Chrysler people. Like if there's a difference. Anyway, whoever it was ran out immediately and said, no, you don't understand. Chrysler paid back all that money. Chrysler made good on all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then independent people like CNN Money, which I don't know how independent that is, but CNN Money runs the numbers and goes, you know, the government lost like over $1.3 billion in helping Chrysler alone. Yeah, they paid back some of the loans.
Right.
But the government is out $1.3 billion. And that doesn't include the little shenanigans that Chrysler pulled with its the retirement funds of all these retirees. That didn't include how those guys got ripped off.
Not to mention the fact that they still closed tons of plants.
Yeah.
And shipped.
And they, I'm sorry, Chrysler fans, but they still put out garbage. We rented back when your grandma was ill. We didn't introduce ourselves.
Okay.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
And this is my daughter. We are the, to my knowledge, the only father-daughter anarchist podcast radio team. Anyway, but when your grandma was ill back in September and all the way through until she died in January... on and off, we were driving the motorhome across country, or we were driving rental cars across country. And so I got your mom and I got the opportunity to drive. Let's see, what did we drive? I think we drove a Kia, a what's that Korean car? A Hyundai, and a Chrysler, and a Chevy. And by far, the Chrysler was the rattiest.
Yeah.
I mean, it just felt bad. It was noisy. It was big, but that's all you could say positive about it. It was the biggest of all of them. It got the worst gas mileage. It was not comfortable. It was tinny. And when you close the doors, it sounded tinny.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get on the highway at highway speeds, it was really loud. So, and this is a new... you know, in rental car, they stay within 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a fairly new car. And the same way with the Chevy, I drive that Chevy. I would never own a Chevy
mm-hmm.
after experiencing that Chevy. Now, on the other hand, the Hyundai the seat wasn't as comfortable as I would have liked for a 12, 14-hour drive.
Right.
But other than that, it got dramatically better gas mileage. It had better handling. It was a little short on elbow room because I'm kind of big. You know, I'm kind of a big guy and my elbows stick out. So I was a little limited on elbow space. But I would give up the elbow space considering that it was getting, I think it got like 37 miles to the gallon on the average, where the Chrysler got something like 19 or something like that.
Right.
And they're in the same classification of car pretty much. So I think my point in that was to say that they failed.
Right.
Maybe they should be out of business.
Right.
And the make the argument, well, but what about all the people who would be out of work? Well, it's going to happen. You keep putting out garbage cars, you can't compete. And if the government keeps stealing from people in Baltimore to pay off the people in Detroit,
yeah,
you know, eventually the people in Baltimore aren't going to have anything left to be stolen from.
Well, and you know, there's this mythology that it's better to have bad business than no business. No, it's better to stop messing with the market and let there be good business.
Yeah, let the bad wood die.
You know, though the reason that we have, what, three car manufacturers in the United States is because of government interference in the car market.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not natural. We shouldn't have that.
And it's not new.
No.
This, I quoted Henry Ford a minute ago. Henry Ford complained, you know, a lot back in the 1920s about how he was having to fight the government because there was favoritism among the corporations. He had a horrible trouble. He ended up building his own railroad across Ohio because he couldn't get steel to Ohio, to Detroit. To build his cars with, because you know, you had to, it's got to go. Essentially, the railroads are in bed with the government, and so in order to get steel from one side of Ohio to the other to get to Michigan to go to his Ford factory, they were just going to shut him down by cutting off his railroad service. So he literally had to go and build his own railroad to support his Ford factory in Detroit, in Dearborn. I'm sure people in Detroit or in Dearborn are pulling their hair out. Ford's not in Detroit! All you Michigan people.
What's the difference?
They're all a bunch of foreigners anyway.
Get 6 feet of snow on them, they all look the same.
Oh, my. So what did we start on that with?
I think we started bashing Clint Eastwood.
Oh, that's right.
Because I see there's... Quickly after that, there was this Facebook picture that was floating around that was saying things like, you know, that's right, if America's going to get out of this recession, we need to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and work hard and put our nose to the grindstone, like, as if the problem is that the American public don't want
to
work.
Yeah. This is equal to you're walking down the street and you see... There's a woman who's been beaten and robbed, and she's laying on the sidewalk, and she's, you know, bloodied, she's been beaten, her purse has been taken, she's been knocked down, and you look at her and go, well, you're just not trying hard enough. Why don't you get up and pull yourself up and make yourself look nice?
Yeah.
She just got beaten and robbed. Maybe you ought to think about maybe chasing the guy who's running down the street with the purse.
Yeah.
You know, rather than blaming her for this.
You know, not that I think the Occupy Wall Street... people have everything right because they don't. But this is not an issue of the American public don't want to work. If it were an issue of the American public don't want to work, there wouldn't be lines around the block every time a McDonald's has a job fair.
Yeah.
But there are.
Yeah. They opened the, was that a Kohl's department store?
Yeah.
They opened up here. And they had, do you remember the numbers?
It was ridiculous. Because I went in there for an interview.
Yeah.
And it was like a circus. It was crazy.
They have way more people to choose from than they, you know, than they have spots to fill. And we've bashed corporates before. That's kind of how the corporations want it. They don't want everybody employed because then they have to pay higher wages. They have to give better benefits.
Yep.
They would rather the big corporations. I hate to say this because this a lot of really market-oriented people are going to get mad at me for saying this, and the economists hearing this are going to like, no, you just don't understand the firm. You don't understand the concept of the firm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. I've gone through all that stuff. I understand it. But here's the problem. Corporations wouldn't exist as they are today without the aggression of the government. Mm-hmm. The government, the gun in the room is what creates a situation where these corporations can behave the way that they behave. Mm-hmm. If the market were left free, there would be no big, giant, mega corporations.
Which is why in certain markets, there are not these big, giant corporations, because right. there's not that interference.
Yeah. So now, on the job market, if the market were free, without the interferences of the government, without the Federal Reserve printing up money like crazy, without the fractional reserve banking creating its own money through credit expansion and all the shenanigans that are going on, without all that, there would be a lot of employment. Mm-hmm. Because the corporations wouldn't have the advantages that they're having. And then corporations would have to either compete with the small guys or go out of business, mm-hmm. which in most cases they would go out of business. Mm-hmm. Now, this would drive wages up. This would drive the cost of living would go down. Wages would go up. And I'm not just making that up. That's what was happening in the late 1800s before these corporations were given the advantages that they're given now. Yep. And before fractional reserve was, back when fractional reserve was still illegal and there was no Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. That's what was happening. The cost of living was going down, wages were going up, and everybody was improving all the way around.
And it drives me crazy because people... You know, when you talk to the general public, you say, you know, what caused this recession? Mm-hmm. And they'll say, oh, it was greed.
Yeah.
It was people being greedy. It was people wanting too much.
Yeah.
People, you know, living above their means and people, you know.
Yeah. Blame it on that woman laying on the ground. You yeah. got robbed because you looked like you needed to be robbed.
Yeah.
If you hadn't been walking down the street carrying that purse, nobody would want to steal it.
Yeah. We have been stolen from.
Yeah.
We have been attacked. Our economy did not magically just get bad because, Iran put an evil eye on us.
Yeah. The Keynesians, which that's, you know, the people in government believe the Keynesians, they say, oh, it's the animal spirits. And they blame bust and boom cycles on animal spirits. Literally, I'm not making it up. They say that the animal spirit in man causes him to act irrationally. But you know what? Animals act rationally.
Yeah.
You don't see squirrels just randomly going like, jumping out of a tree for no reason and dying.
Well, you don't see lions attacking a herd of gazelle and killing every single one of the gazelle.
Yeah.
And having there be a glut of gazelle meat that they can't eat and then
starving.
And then starving because there aren't any more gazelle.
Animals don't act irrationally. The state acts irrationally.
Yeah.
Because the state is based on myths and beliefs that aren't real. But human beings left to themselves will always act rationally. Mm-hmm. As long as they're not insane.
Right.
You know, there are always within the public, there's always a very small sector of individuals who are not of a clear mind. But the community can deal with those people.
Right.
You know, just like within, well, I've used animals a lot in explanations for things because I've observed animals so much. I've watched a flock of sparrows, and the sparrows are behaving pretty consistently. And then apparently, to me, mm-hmm. as the observer, for no reason whatsoever, the whole flock of sparrows will pick out one sparrow and kill it. Mm-hmm. And then they go on about their business. And I look at that and I think, why in the world did they do that?
Right.
What caused that behavior? Well, there was something about that sparrow that broke the rules of their species. Mm-hmm. It could have been diseased. It could have not behaved according to the norms of their group, mm-hmm. which means maybe it didn't give warning signs like it was supposed to. Maybe it did something.
Right.
Something sparked that. That was not irrational behavior on the part of the flock. That was not you know, 20,000 cattle running off a cliff because somebody's coming up behind them shooting into the air.
Right.
There's some specific catalyst that caused them to realize that that one sparrow was detrimental to their flock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's sparrows, but watching the blue jays, you will never, ever, ever see blue jays do that. The blue jays have a very intensive social structure, but they do not, they're not communal.
Mm-hmm.
So no one blue jay can attack another blue jay like that. Mm-hmm. Now, they can attack to protect what they've found. Mm-hmm. If one finds a food stash, he can fight to keep his food stash. Or where he puts food someplace, he can fight to keep it there. But they will not just attack, and the flock will not attack one blue jay,
mm-hmm.
because it's not within their species to do that. Their species is governed by laws that,
right.
you know, that they inherently understand. And human beings are like that, too. The problem is, we don't have a mechanism to deal with all these things, because the state has come in and usurped all those.
Mm-hmm.
And now we rely on the state to make the decisions. And so the state just picks out people and says, okay, this person we need to kill because they can't be in society. But then you start looking at who they're killing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good portion of those people who it's a mistake.
Right.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
The state is in control. Or the state decides what corporation is going to live and what corporation is going to die. Well, based upon what? Based upon market pressures? Based upon who's working out the best? Or based upon who pays the best bribe to the government?
Well, yeah, because, you know, when there were all of these, when the internet explosion happened,
mm-hmm.
and then government came in and started regulating it and drove the internet pretty much into the ground.
Right.
Because that didn't just happen, you know?
Yeah, that bubble was the same as all the other bubbles.
It was a new technology, and it was gaining momentum, and it was gaining economic ground,
mm-hmm.
and the state swooped in and began regulating it and taxing it. And
there was a lot of junk going on with stocks and mm-hmm. securities and exchange and so forth like that, where the underpinning financials of many of these businesses that were internet-based were based on this false economy that had been created by government regulations
mm-hmm.
Through the Securities Exchange Commission. And so when the whole thing fell apart, all those businesses had no substance to them.
Yep.
And then the whole thing, you know, it was a bubble, mm-hmm. and it popped in almost overnight.
Yeah. And the state deemed that those businesses were acceptable to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But these giant behemoth car companies that are so outdated
mm-hmm.
are too precious to fail.
Yeah. On a totally different topic, let me take us off in a completely different direction. I saw this headline the other day, and it says, common food items contain 180 times more fluoride than tap water. So seeing a headline like that, it caught my eye, and I was like, really? So I started checking this out.
Mm-hmm.
And the story says, this is coming from, now I didn't find it here initially. I found other libertarian sources going back. It's quoted in other places, so you have to chase it back to get to the source.
Right.
So the source, as far as I can tell, comes to us from naturalsociety.com.
Or at least that's where the source links end.
Yeah, that's just the best that I can find where the links all die at. And so at this naturalsociety.com, and I'm not going to link to it because I don't want to give them any traffic, any undue traffic, but I'm looking at the site, and it's not a bad site. They've got some sponsorship.
They got a logo.
They have a logo. It's a basic WordPress format, so it doesn't take a lot of skill to do this. So the story says, and it's short enough, I'm not going to read the whole story, but it's short enough I can give you a pretty good idea. It says, fluorinated tap water and toothpaste are oftentimes considered the main source of fluoride exposure, but it turns out common food items can actually largely contribute to fluoride intake. And then it quotes this expert named Jeff Green. It doesn't say how he's an expert or why he's an expert, or it doesn't give any links to as to why we know that we can trust Jeff Green.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say he's a professor of something or other at so-and-so. It doesn't say it just says Jeff Green. I don't know if there's a real Jeff Green or not.
And he's a fluoride expert.
Yeah, and we have no idea on this in this article how he's a fluoride expert. But according to this expert, your foods can have up to 180 times more fluoride than fluorinated tap water. And he says that the culprit is non-organic food. Now, here's an interesting thing. He says, this is a quote from the story. Cryolite is actually sodium aluminum fluoride. This sodium aluminum fluoride is especially effective at killing bugs. It's also very sticky. So when they spray it, it's more likely to stick to the produce unless you work really, really hard to try to get it off. And then it says, Green states that large numbers of non-organic produce items can contain shocking levels of fluoride-based pesticides. And he cites iceberg lettuce as being a particularly bad offender. It says, in fact, iceberg lettuce can be laced with a startling 180 parts per million fluoride. That's 180 times higher than fluorinated water. So what he's saying is that iceberg lettuce can have 180 times the fluoride that's allowed in tap water. And that's pretty shocking.
It is.
And then he goes on to say citrus fruits are often, they can contain up to 95 parts per million, 95 times too much fluoride, more than water. He says potato skins can have 22 times the allowed parts for, and raisins can have 55 times. The problem is, with this whole story, there is nothing, there are no links actually supporting these statements.
Right.
There are links telling, like, fluoride has been linked to decrease in IQ in children. There's links to support that. There's links to support that the government is calling for lower levels in fluoride. There are links to support that. But nowhere in the story does it give us the links that actually show us that any of this is true about the lettuce or any of the non-organic stuff that he's talking about. And the reason I brought that up is because this type of a story appeals particularly to, you know, people who are interested in health food, mm-hmm. some liberal-leaning people who are very interested in health food, and some libertarians who are very interested in homegrown foods, mm-hmm. and health foods and living, a healthier life and so forth. And so a story like this is very appealing. It's almost written for us.
And it's not unbelievable.
Yeah, because of what we've talked about before. We don't doubt anything. There's nothing the government could do that we would say, well, that's beyond what they would do.
Right.
They're evil. They'll do anything.
Right. And the idea of, you know, I don't know what pesticides are made out of.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm told pesticides are made out of fluoride,
seems logical.
Okay. I know it's poison. Fluoride is poison.
Yeah.
So, and I know that there's pesticide residue on conventional produce.
Right, right.
So
much of the story seems legit, but without actual links to show you.
Right.
You know, without a way. I saw a quote. Who was that by? Oh, boy, I'm going to mess this up. I know what it was. This was on Facebook. A quote was attributed to John F. Kennedy. Supposedly, it was just like a week before he died or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something to the effect of, I'm going to expose all of this. You know, here's the quote. It was like, anarchy would be better than this government we have, and I'm going to expose them for it. And then like a week later, he was killed.
Right.
And so this was on Facebook, except there's no citation as to where that quote came from.
Right.
So we're supposed to just believe that? We're supposed to believe that John F. Kennedy was walking around, I'm getting ready to turn everything over to anarchy. Boom! Now he's dead.
Yeah.
Now, I would love to believe that. That's so tempting. Wouldn't that be great to believe that? But I can't believe that. Because there's nothing provided with that to document it.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a really outstandingly unusual thing that you're trying to convince me of, you need equally outstanding evidence.
And, you know, even if your claim is not outlandish,
mm-hmm.
There are so many things, you know, people all the time, they put in emails or Facebook or whatever, you know, such and such, this soldier came home from Iraq and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, Snopes.
Yeah.
You know, fake.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, there's nothing in it that's like, well, that's obviously fake.
Yeah.
But it's the little things in life that you have to, say, where's the proof? Where's the citation?
Yeah.
Where, as liberty-minded individuals, because we're fighting the state and because the state's tools are theft, lies, and aggression,
mm-hmm.
because they're using lies,
yeah.
you have to seek out the truth.
To err on the side of being thorough and honest, you have to throw the whole story out.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't believe anything about fluoride and iceberg lettuce mm-hmm. because you've not given me anything of substance that I can base any kind of real assessment on.
Yeah.
One last thing before we're about out of time, but one last thing I want to throw out because there was just something that someone said that was just so outlandish that my jaw just dropped. I couldn't believe that I heard this said. And so I'm not going to get into a big thing and really attack anybody or anything, but I just want to point out somebody, a person, and whoever needs to know knows who this person is. But the quote is, there was a conflict between, like, who's libertarian enough and who's not libertarian enough. You know, I'm more libertarian than you. You're not a libertarian good enough for me. Oh, that silly argument was going on. And the one person said, see, this is what's wrong right here with libertarians. This back and forth like this. This is what's wrong with libertarians. And then he said this.
Which, you know, you can agree with that point.
Sure, sure. I'm good with that. But then he says this ridiculous statement. This, and this is a quote except one word that I've changed so that the delicacies of the audience won't be offended. This is the perfect example of why libertarians can't get stuff done anywhere at all in the United States. This is a perfect example of why the movement is smaller today than when it was founded in the 70s. I don't know how a person says that with a straight face, so let me just throw out some facts about the libertarian movement. In 1968, the libertarian movement was split between libertarians that were working in the Democratic Party and libertarians that were working in the Republican Party. After the 1968 conventions, the libertarians in those two parties realized that they had no place in those two parties, and they broke away from them in a very public way.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of floated around for a year or two without any real... Now, there was kind of a separation. There were the Rothbardians, and they were the Randians. And they kind of floated around for a couple years there with no real direction as to what they were doing or where they were going. But in 1971, David Nolan decided to try to bring them all together and get things organized a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So David Nolan put out, got a hold of newsletter, mailing addresses, and he sent out invitations, and he really put a lot of legwork to get as many libertarians to come to his house as possible so that there could be some kind of strategy as to how to move forward. Now, David Nolan was living in Colorado at the time, so he had this group of people came to his house. Now, he wasn't living in a stadium, he was living in a house. So there was maybe a couple hundred people at the very most. I don't know how many people made it to David Nolan's house.
Right.
But I'm thinking there was probably 60 or 70.
Right.
But there couldn't have been more than a couple hundred.
Right, because you can't fit more than a couple hundred people in a house.
Right. So from 1968, there was roughly, according to people like Rothbard and some of the others, there was about 30,000 people who were actually in the liberty movement at the time in 1968
mm-hmm.
that considered themselves libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
By 1971, there was enough to fit at David Nolan's house.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we talking here? Maybe 100, maybe 70, plus maybe another 100 or 200 that couldn't make it.
Right.
Maybe 1,000 that couldn't make it. So they got to David Nolan's house and they formed the Libertarian Party with that one group of people. That was in 1971. By 1976, Roger McBride was able to get about 170,000 votes for the President of the United States in the Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm.
170,000 votes in 1976. By 1988, Ron Paul received over 400,000 votes in 1988. But Bob Barr, by 2008, received 500,000 votes, plus realizing that most of the Ron Paul people didn't vote for Bob Barr.
Right.
So if you look at the 2008 election, 500,000 voted for Bob Barr, but a million that same year, over a million people voted for other positions not Bob Barr.
Mm-hmm.
So there were about a million libertarian voters in 2008 that voted. That's not including the ones that didn't vote.
Right.
But there was about a million of them in 2008 that actually voted. Something like 40,000 or something wrote in Ron Paul, that counted. That anyway, so that was in 2008. Now, since 2008 to now, you think about how the libertarian movement has exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the Libertarian Party, but it has grown too. But the libertarian movement has exploded since 2008. I'm not sure how a person can say with a straight face that this X, whatever, is why the libertarians can't get anything done, or this is why the movement is smaller than it was in the 70s. In the 70s, there was literally like 100,000 of us if you stretched it. We're over a million strong, almost 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We were a million strong. And that's a million strong that are actually going out and voting.
Right.
How many don't vote?
Right.
Because when this year...
How many are disenchanted enough with the entire process that they don't vote?
Exactly.
I don't vote.
So when you hear somebody say something like that, it's very difficult to see any credibility in the rest of their argument if they're saying something that ridiculous. In 2010, libertarians either held on to seats or were elected to new seats, equaling 154 positions in the government. 154 positions are held by libertarians. That's the Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm.
That's not even including Republicans that lean libertarian or Democrats that lean libertarian.
Mm-hmm. Or independents not.
Yeah. Okay, now we're way over. So now
okay.
So for more on liberty, zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. Thank you, folks.